Lumos. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Shout Guys Radio. I'm your host and secret keeper, Ezra, a.k.a. Bill, also known as Sir Ezra the Watchful, History of Magic Professor, the Flannel Wizard, obviously. Yours, truly, me. Please welcome your lovely design witch, the fascination of this year, Triwizard Champion herself, my wonderful co-host, and yours, Lottie, a.k.a. Fleur.
Hello, and einen wunderschönen guten Tag. It's so good to have you back in our beautiful little cottage on the outskirts of Tinworth. Kommt rein und macht's euch gemütlich. Welcome to episode 94, I like that number, in which we discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. This week, we will talk about chapter 15, Beauxbatons and Durmstrang. We'll give you a quick life update with our homemade cottage ketchup, feed our brains with important trivia knowledge, and then dive head on into our chapter summary audio experience. I didn't say it, but almost. Did you hear the summary was already on my tongue?
Yeah. You had a couple words kind of like mulling together there. Like they wanted to be
right through
with the other words.
Right on through.
Dang. That was good.
All right. We are out of school still. We are in the middle of the summer. How's it going so far?
It's going good. It's going really well. We actually had a nice 4th of July there. So that was fun. We went up to Put-in Bay.
Yes.
Actually, which was cool. Took my dad up there.
Island.
Yeah, it was great. You know, we didn't do, there's golf carts that you can rent up there, and we didn't do much walking around.
Yeah.
Which was fine, but for some reason, we were sore afterwards.
Yeah, it was weird.
I'm gonna go ahead and say this. I love my dad, and he's older, so we let him drive, obviously. But when you're not driving the golf cart, and you're just banging around back there on the back, I mean, you're just literally balancing in ways that you've never balanced before.
Yeah.
And he was taking those turns, and I was like, man, I'm going off the back of this thing. I was like, wow. So I was back
Sometimes those were last-minute turns or very abrupt stopping and starting again.
Stupid cart backfired on us. It was like, poof, poof.
Yep. It was fun.
I was like, whoa.
I can't imagine like being a bigger group in one of those golf carts and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Younger kids, college kids doing their thing.
Crazy. It was crazy.
That's why ours was also not in perfect condition. Our golf cart was
not. No, we went for the cheap. We're going to be for a couple hours. We're not doing this for a long time. But yeah, it was cool. We went over there and had a great time. And then we rolled back to Port Clinton and watched fireworks.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was a fun time. Last year we were in Germany. And then the year before that, we were watching the fireworks up from a plane looking down on.
Oh, true.
Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That was interesting. That was really cool.
Yeah, that's true. So, yes, you've never really been in America, I guess, for 4th of July, like, except for that
For that one time, yeah. I have been to the States numerous times before I moved here, but never around 4th of July.
Yeah, okay.
For some reason, I was always home in July.
Right. Or, like we said, the one time we were flying.
Right.
And so, yeah.
So, that was a fun experience, but... Anyway, I was going to talk about school because in this chapter, we're going to meet wizards and witches from other schools all over Europe. And I wanted to know, I felt like there was a lot of schools that were actually mentioned, especially after Hogwarts Legacy came out. So that gave us some more information on other schools. And the list is still pretty short, though, compared to, you know, how big the world is and how many countries there are. So I'm going to read them to you, and then I will ask you the question, which wizarding school would you like to visit the most aside from Hogwarts? So you can't say Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, since we're in America, we would assume you went to Ilvermorny when you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
But you can say Ilvermorny if you want to, but I would assume, okay, maybe pick one of the others. So we have, of course, Beauxbatons Academy of Magic, which is in France.
Mm-hmm.
And they do take students from France, Spain, Portugal, Netherlands, Luxembourg, and Belgium. So that's, we talked about this in the past. It's interesting that Netherlands and Luxembourg, Belgium, they're all bordering, and I mean, France, of course, too, bordering Germany.
Right.
But it sounds like they would not take students from Germany. It sounds like maybe German students would either go to Durmstrang, or Beauxbatons. Then we have Castelo Braxo in the Amazon rainforest in Brazil.
Okay.
And they take students from all over South America. Then we have Durmstrang, which is probably in Scandinavia, or they said the northernmost reaches of either Norway or Sweden. So we definitely have the Scandinavian countries that go there. It says willing to accept international students, but presumably mainly Northern and Eastern Europe. So Eastern Europe. And of course, we know that Crum plays for Bulgaria for the national team. So we know that they, some of them at least, must go to Durmstrang. And I could imagine, yeah, again, Germany would be either north with the Scandinavian countries there, because we border Denmark too. Mm-hmm. Or you go over to the west and go to Beaubaton. We're not sure.
It's crazy. You're right there kind of in the middle. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
right between them. But wild that you're Fleur, and then you might be going right? to Durmstrang.
Right. Oh, yeah. Then we have Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry in the Highlands of Scotland, and they take students from Scotland, England, Ireland, Northern Ireland, and Wales. Then we have Ilvermorny, which says Mount Greylock. It's in Mount Greylock. Not sure where that is, but they take students from all over North America, so I think Canadians would also come to Ilvermorny. And I assume that Castello, Bruxo, and Ilvermorny are really big schools. I mean, they cover such a big area compared to, you know, Beaubaton or Hogwarts.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Then we have a school that is called, and I, sorry, if you're from Russia or you speak Russian, I have no idea how to say this. Koldov Storets is in Russia and only takes also students from Russia, it says here. Then we have Mahotokoro in Japan, and they only take students from Japan. And then we have Wagadu in the Mountains of the Moon in Uganda, and they take students from all over Africa. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 schools that we know of around the world. And now my question is, which school would you like to visit? Let's say you can go there for a year as an exchange student. Which one would it be?
So for me, it's pretty easy. It'd be Durmstrang.
That's
I'd so want to cool. go there and see what it's all about. I also like the Scandinavian area.
Yeah.
So it's something I've always wanted to go kind of visit and travel and see more of.
Yeah.
And the fact that you'd be there, I'd have to go check in on you.
But
you
they know teach what I mean? The dark arts.
They also teach other things too. They don't just teach the dark arts.
I wonder what their curriculum looks like. Yeah.
They don't all come out of there as dark wizards. You know what I mean?
No, that's true.
So, I mean, clearly, if they were literally just practicing the dark arts left and right, I mean, Dumbledore wouldn't be inviting them to this school.
Right. True.
So their curriculum includes a course in the dark arts.
I mean,
I'm sure you can go study if you're advanced or you're at a certain level, and then you can go check it out. So to me, it feels like it's like one of those, like every high school has sort of, depending on the teacher who's there and their skill set, right? They can offer something. So they have a teacher, or they have a one course or an elective there that you're able to take that people are like, oh my God, that's awesome. They teach that there. And it's one thing that deviates slightly from the rest of the curriculum that everyone is already learning.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. So what about you?
Well, my number one, of course, would be Hogwarts. Because I love Scotland, I love Hogwarts, and I definitely want to go there. But
you said
I said we can't choose Hogwarts, so I'd either say I'd probably love to see Beaubaton, but also Mahutokoro, because I would love to go see what the Japanese wizarding world looks like, and their school, of course, like schools in general in Japan would be very interesting. I actually almost went to Japan as an exchange student, and then last minute I decided not to go there but to the United States instead, and now I'm very thankful for that, because you know that definitely improved my English and my interest for the English language, the country, and that's one of the reasons I was in Ohio for my exchange student year.
Yeah.
And that's why I was so happy to listen to Swish and Flick, because they were from Ohio and I knew all the places they were talking about, and now I'm here.
Yeah, now you're here. You almost went to Japan though, and what would have happened? I mean, we wouldn't.
Yep.
Let's not think about it.
No. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. But no, yeah, I think that actually would be kind of cool myself. We were going to go to Star Wars Celebration, which is in Japan this year, next year.
Next year, 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're skipping it for one more year and then never again.
One more time. Yeah.
Never again. But
it's just so far, and yeah.
Yeah.
We travel a lot to Germany already, so there you go. Right now we have other priorities, but love to go one day.
Yeah.
Again.
Yep.
With you. All right. Okay, before we move on to the trivia training, we want to mention a cool opportunity for you guys. If there's anything you would like to learn, skills you want to acquire, maybe painting, knitting, cooking, photography, editing, podcasting, or even learn how to increase your productivity, then you can try Skillshare 1 month for free if you use our link down below in the show notes. The first month will be for free, and then you will even get 20% off your first payment in the second month if you decide you want to continue using Skillshare. And I use it at the moment to take all sorts of art classes online, and I have a long list of more classes that I saved for later. So it really helped me to get an idea. First, I wanted to start learning art, and I didn't know where to start at all and which medium I wanted to start in, or which do I rather want to draw or paint. And so I took a couple of classes just to get an idea of all the different mediums and styles that are out there. I found a really cool class, Drawing for Beginners by Marco Bucci, and it's, 10 hours long, but he walks you through, he's a great teacher, he walks you through how to draw basic shapes, and then how to draw figure drawing, or how to do compositions and stuff. It's honestly, he could probably charge $200 for that course, because it's a great class. It's so fun to take.
Yeah. Guys, they also have on there, I've not searched, but I'm pretty sure they probably have some charms class on there, some transfiguration or something. Would you guys take a course
on
transfiguration? Okay. And it's just this, you get in there and it's like how to transfigure your wife into, I'm just thinking like what course I would run, like makeup I put on you, or like,
that'd be a cool cosplay class, right?
Yeah, actually, I was even.
Transfiguration, but like with cosplay.
Yeah. At one point when I first started podcasting, a lot of people were like, how do you do it? What's all the equipment? There's tons of tutorials out there now.
Yeah.
But I remember back when I started, it was still kind of, not a whole lot was out there, and I had to do some more digging and grinding to kind of find it. And people were asking me to do it. And I considered making a skill share course and stuff. But who knows? Maybe one day we'll make a fun one.
Because we're teachers, so why not, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely check out the link if you're interested. Check out the link down below in our description, and you get that first month for free. And also you support our podcast a little bit.
Yes.
Okay, let's move on to the trivia training. I'm excited to answer all your questions you have, and I'm excited to ask you my question. I have a question I'm dying to ask you, and this is something I took to heart what you said last time. Let's make it about learning something. You ready?
I'm ready.
My question is, whose ancestor from the paternal bloodline, and we just assume that just because of the last name, was not a minister of magic at the British Ministry? A. Leta Lestrange. B. Cedric Diggory. C. Lavender Brown. Or D. Pansy Parkinson.
So you're saying basically that three of these do have ancestors that were ministers of magic.
Yes.
Yeah.
But one does not, as far as we know, and because it's just, we assume that the father gives on the last name, which doesn't always have to be the case, but it's just which last name do we find in the list?
Yeah. So Diggory, I know we do have, I know that for sure. I feel like Parkinson we do too. And Lestrange seems like a powerful name, so possibly, so I'm going to go with C, Lavender Brown.
And that is correct. Very good reasoning. We have Eldridge Diggory from 1733 to 1747. Before that was Perseus Parkinson, 1726 to 1733. And let's see, we have, where is the Lestrange? Rodolphus Lestrange, 1835 to 1841.
Okay.
So you are correct. Lavender Brown, even though she is, I think, a pure blood, does not have a minister of magic in the family, at least on the Brown side, it seems.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Okay, cool beans. Okay, according to this chapter, When was the last known Triwizard tournament? What is the date of the last known Triwizard tournament?
1762.
Close. 1792.
Let's see. Because I remember, yeah, Hermione said that, and I didn't. I just knew 17. And you asked me about a year number last time, too. Didn't you?
I did. Didn't he? Oh, yeah. 355. Armando, dip it.
Okay, let's see. We have blue.
Okay, what is the name of Hogwarts' founder for House Ravenclaw?
Oh, that's so hard to say. Rowena.
Rowena.
Ravenclaw.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding.
I got a point.
Yellow.
How many times has Gilderoy Lockhart won which weekly's Most Charming Smile Award?
At least five times, right? Five-time winner?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, five-time winner of the Witch's Weekly. Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award. I knew you would know this question. I think I would have known. But that was a perfect question for you. Okay,
yeah.
We have 16-16. We both have 16 points at the moment.
Nice.
So you caught up.
About time.
Good job on the lavender brown.
Thank you.
All right, onto the summary.
Chapter 15, Bobaton and Durmstrang. Harry gets up early the next day to write a letter to Sirius. In the letter, he insists that everything is fine, that he must have imagined the pain in his scar, and that there's no need for Sirius to return to the country. He heads up to the Owry and sends Hedwig off to deliver the letter to his godfather. At breakfast, he tells Ron and Hermione about what he's done, but Hermione thinks he shouldn't be lying about his pain to Sirius. They drop the topic, however, and Harry tries to put his worries about Sirius aside for now. During the next Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson, Professor Moody subjects each student to the Imperious Curse, with Dumbledore's permission, of course. He wants to teach them how it feels to be under the influence of this spell and how they can fight it. Harry is the only student able to somewhat resist the curse. Instead of obediently following Moody's voice in his head, instructing him to jump onto the desk, he tries to prevent himself from doing so and painfully crashes into the table. Moody is pleased and praises Harry's resistance as a positive example for everyone. Finally, after four demonstrations of Moody using Imperio on Harry, he is able to completely resist the curse. The fourth year classes are becoming increasingly difficult, causing students to stress over the amount of homework they have to do. In Transfiguration class, Professor McGonagall explains to them that the OWL exams in their fifth year are drawing nearer, and that studying and preparing for them already starts in their fourth year. Almost every single class adds to their workload, even Hagrid's. The Care of Magical Creatures teacher asks them to come and observe the growing Scroots every other evening. When they return to the castle for dinner, lots of students are already huddled around a big sign in the entrance hall, which announces that Bobaton and Durmstrang students will arrive on Friday afternoon for the Triwizard Tournament. The entire rest of the week, the tournament remains the number one topic in the corridors, classrooms, and common rooms of the castle. Who is going to enter? What are the foreign students going to be like? What kind of tasks will the champions have to face? On Friday morning, they find the Great Hall decorated with house banners and Hogwarts coat of arms. Fred and George Weasley are still acting strange and secretive about a mysterious person they're trying to get a hold of. They also refuse to buy badges from Hermione for her SPEW campaign, assuring her that they've been down to the kitchen several times and that the house elves love working there. Then Hedwig swoops into the Great Hall and brings news from Sirius. In his letter, he remains unconvinced by Harry's reassurances and informs him that he's already back in the country. Harry should keep him posted about everything that's happening at Hogwarts. After their last afternoon lesson, the heads of each Hogwarts house escort their students to greet the arriving guests. No one knows how exactly they're getting to Hogwarts, until they spot a massive blue horse-drawn carriage in the sky. After the carriage has landed safely on the grounds, about a dozen elegantly dressed students from Bobaton Academy emerge from it, led by their giant headmistress, Madame Maxime. They're quite unprepared for the cold Scottish weather and hurry inside to warm up. Shortly after, a large ship arises from the surface of the lake. It anchors right by the bank, and another dozen of furry-cloaked Durmstrang students disembark along with their headmaster. Professor Karkaroff approaches Dumbledore to greet him. He makes a rather oily impression on Harry. Then Ron's jaw drops and he punches Harry in the arm as he spots Bulgarian Quidditch prodigy and seeker Victor Krum.
What would you do if you saw Michael Jordan all of a sudden walks in. I mean, he was probably older, too old to be a student, right? But walks into your gym just to shoot some hoops. He walks right by you, right past you.
I would have said, there goes your royal airness right there. There he is. That's the king of the courts right there, you know? So, yeah, no, it's crazy. It's a crazy moment because these guys just got done watching Victor Krum back in the Quidditch World Cup, and they're huge fans. So I don't think, they didn't expect it. They knew he was young, but I'm not sure that they expected him to show up here.
Yeah.
So he looks like he's one of, probably in his final year, maybe, I guess. I don't really know.
Probably, yeah.
Wow.
As I just told a joke that was so funny, but we can't include it on the podcast.
Yeah, we can't.
That's why I'm crying.
Guys, I'm sorry. Sometimes I say things that are absolutely inappropriate, and the big joke is, like, what if we would have left what I said in or out? And I don't know. I think some of you have been like, heck yeah, like, let's go. But I think some of you have been like, seriously, clean this podcast up, man. Come on. But that's just the mischievous side of me. I'm sorry. Hufflepuffs, I don't know if people know this. Hufflepuffs are also, we're good. We have a great time. We're hardworking. Yes, we're loyal. Absolutely, we're loyal. We're so loyal that like, probably dirty joke that you told in the common room, we're not going to go tell it there, but that's how loyal we are. We're going to like keep it close to the chest, okay? Like, whoa, dude. That was hilarious, but we probably should keep that in the common room. I'm kidding. But, I mean, we're crazy. Hufflepuffs are nuts, man. Some of us, anyways, are a little bit crazy. Life of the party, I like to think. So.
Yes, okay,
we're going to do things a little bit differently this chapter because I've got Lottie all sorts of emotional and I've just kind of been all over the crit. So she has bullet points. This might be fun for folks. This might be fun.
Okay.
This is a twist-a-rooski.
Oh, it's like one of those PowerPoint karaoke.
Kipawa?
PowerPoint karaoke.
What about them? I don't even know what that is.
That means you have a bunch of PowerPoints. You have no clue what's in them. And you just pick one. And you have to give the presentation.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, this one I kind of, at least thankfully, I've read the chapter. So
you did.
Okay. I can give this presentation. So you ready for this, guys? I'm going to lead you through Lottie's notes.
Okay.
All right. They're not mine. I don't know if people know. Here's another thing. Behind the scenes fact about the podcast. How often have I taken notes? When
Never.
Do I take? Never. I was gifted with an unusually large head. Okay. I don't know if that's a gift. It was always a curse for me as a kid. I was like, jeez, a cow, you know? I mean, I used my head on the football field, you know, bang, hit you, knock you down. But then I started to realize, hey, it actually stores a lot of knowledge. You can keep a lot of stuff right up in there, right? In that frontal lobe.
I have to
lobe.
Be very careful what I say because it will be forgotten.
It's dangerous. Here we go. Back on track. All right. There shall be no editing from this point forward. Do you think we can do that? Do you think we can do that? Watch me. I have been podcasting since 2016, maybe 15. Okay. I don't even remember. That's how, I mean, back in the days. All right.
Yes.
So watch and learn. Okay, friends. Okay. That's how it's done. People are like, oh, this is going to be a train wreck. Okay. Point number one, bullet point number one, Harry lying to Sirius. Okay. Big deal. Why are you looking at me like that? Don't lie. It's bad. Okay, guys?
Yeah, I must not tell lies.
I must not tell lies, Professor. Okay? Yeah. So, here it is. And actually, wow, dude. You just took that full circle. Harry's been lying since here, right?
Yeah.
But he's trying to protect Sirius. And I think it's like, you know, we've probably all, at some point in some way, whether it's with a loved one, a friend, family member, whoever, said something that then caused that person to worry, right? And then they're trying to console you and say, hey, no, thanks for telling me the truth. Like, what's cool about this is that Sirius doesn't buy it.
Yeah.
He doesn't buy it.
I mean, the way Harry wrote it, though. Let me see. I think it's right here.
Yeah, Sirius, I'm fine. Don't worry about me, bro.
Yeah. Just kidding. I was imagining my scar hurting. I was half asleep when I wrote to you last time. There's no point coming back. Everything is fine here. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about me. My head feels completely normal. It's like he reassures 50 times in like a 2-line letter, everything is normal.
Right. so that actually reminds me of a moment in Star Wars where Han Solo says, we had a slight weapons malfunction, but everything's perfectly all right. we're fine. We're all fine here now. Thanks.
Yeah.
How are you? Right. It's exact same thing. So it's sort of like, you know, just chill out. Sorry, I didn't mean to send that. But he's already in the country, so yeah. He's moving fast. Question for you: how is he moving around? I mean, I know he still has what's his face, feathers, right?
Oh yeah,
Buckbeak.
Yeah, wither wings.
Problem with the big head is that you've got to search around in there, right? It's like Sherlock Holmes says, like the memory palace where you kind of go in, and you have to find it, but it's a palace, so there's tons of rooms, and so I have to go around.
A huge palace too.
Yeah,
because especially with the English language, it's just true. Scattered all over double, the place.
You have double the vocab.
Yeah,
to keep in your mind. That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
How do you think that's packaged?
Like,
do you think you have all the vocab words for like German vocab and English vocab in the same room in your palace?
I don't know.
And they're just separated. Like once you're on this side, you're on this side.
There's two different libraries, and sometimes if you've been in one library too long, you don't remember how to get back to the other library.
Holy smokes. Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. Anyway, the whole point there is, yeah, what do you think in terms of like how he traveled? I mean, is he just flying back?
Okay, two things. First, before you said, yeah, right, Buckbeak is with him. Forgot about that. I imagined a Jacob-style transformation into a giant wolf, and then he runs...
Wow.
200 miles per hour.
Wow, because he's a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a
grim. He's a grim dog.
Yeah.
Okay, that could be.
I mean, you are faster, but I don't think he would run from down south all the way to Scotland in like 2 weeks. Well, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty
and
fast.
Also swim. Maybe as a dog.
Well, wait a second, though. It has been several weeks. Feels like, right?
Yeah.
Because he sends that when they're on the train, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Hogwarts Express. And then Now in this very chapter, we have the arrival. We have October. So it's been a couple weeks.
Yeah. And I think he took off right when Harry informed him that his scar's hurting. And, you know, he heard about all these other signs. So, Yeah, he left a couple of weeks ago. But I would imagine he could fly, like you said, yeah, probably fly on Buckbeak. I just imagine also like him being in his dog form flying on a hippogriff, what that would look like.
Holy. That's crazy.
That's funny.
Someone should draw that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Serious.
Someone
traveling back.
Talented.
Come on, Lottie. Go. That'd be cute though.
But yeah, I think they traveled very carefully though. Because you would think if they fly, they wouldn't take 4 or 5 weeks. But I think they had to be really careful and go to very different deserted places to land.
Right.
Make sure. I don't know how the
air travel
right is controlled in the Wizarding World, because everyone can just mount a broomstick and go.
How do they do that?
Yeah.
How do witches and wizards avoid their brooms? There must be some obviously they can put disillusionment charms
on
themselves.
Yeah, I think so too. There's probably a
but
rule.
But do you have to? Do you get a certain level, or you have to travel by broom? You have to. Is there a law? Is there police officers in the sky?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that'd be a cool job.
Yeah, there should definitely. I mean, there's probably a like a natural border that you can't really cross, just because as a human you can't breathe if you're that high up. So you can go to only a certain level, and it gets too cold.
Dang.
But maybe you can use magic to go even higher than that.
We're wizards.
Yeah, we can do anything. Yeah, maybe. Because then you would think, okay, how does that work evading all these Muggle planes and Muggle aircrafts? Yeah.
Right, which is cool.
Or the aircrafts that no one knows where they're from.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, oh yeah. Actually, what if, oh my God, full circle.
Yeah.
Holy crap. What we're seeing in the sky, this phenomenon, this UAP phenomenon.
Oh, those are just
charms. That's wizards. Yeah. That's just charms. That's a disillusionment charm.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be that it's somehow, some wizards are better, some are, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It comes off. Remember how they appear and they disappear? It's like, guy forgot to, you know, he got an incoming, I don't know, message on his new wizard cell phone, and he, you know. He forgets to maintain the enchantment. Yeah. Anyway.
Could be.
Yeah,
okay. I think they flew.
And I think they
just very like carefully planning their stops and
these are questions routes. Though that no one is asking.
Yeah.
Just want to say,
yes.
Okay, how does Sirius get from here to there?
Right.
And I like that he would have to kind of, maneuver around.
And there's another question that no one is asking. Can you tell me which one?
I can't because it's in my notes here. Okay. who takes care of the owlry?
Right.
Who does?
Do they have someone who takes care of owls?
Who does? Who? they tell us all the time, you know, like owls say who?
Oh my God.
So they, you know, we know. I mean, I'm just answering your question. Who takes care of it? Right?
Wow.
Sorry.
Giggle water.
Yeah.
I love it.
Are we on giggle water right now? I think we are. But who takes care? who takes care of the owlry? I don't know. Is it Hagrid or is it somebody else? Wouldn't you like to be that person, though?
No.
You know what's also crazy? Is I went to we had a bike trip where we traveled by bike.
Yeah.
Okay. I pretended that I was in a Jedi starfighter. And I'm traveling to, it's sort of like a conservatory area.
Okay.
But you got to, this is crazy. We had owl pellets. And it was a part of our science class.
Okay.
Owl pellet is what it's their regurgitated food. So inside of it, you would find fur. It was a fur pellet, right? It's all these mice and rodents.
Oh.
And you literally pull it apart. It's their poop, essentially.
What?
Yeah, and you would go through it. They still do it to this day. Rachel, my niece, will be doing it soon. I mean, they go over there, and it's a whole science day where they dissect them, and they find a bunch of little bones, and they find little mice and stuff. Sorry, wow. I probably should have mentioned all. It's just nature, so
crazy though.
It is crazy, but they mention it actually in this chapter because he walks on, he slips on it.
Right.
He slips on the owl pellets. And so anyway, yeah, who takes care of the owlry? Don't know. Would love to do it myself.
I mean, yeah, you got to feed them, you got to clean that space, and I wonder if Filch does it, because remember when doesn't he run into Filch and Cho at the same time when he
Oh, does he?
Filch got a rumor, it's in the fifth book, that there were stink bombs that he delivers from to somewhere.
The punishments and detentions, and he's now running around like he is on some high octane something.
Give him a break. I mean,
oh, he's got a lot to do. He's got a lot of cleaning to do and stuff. So,
Owlry's
a mess, bro. We just, I mean, literally, we in this chapter, we just realize it's a mess up in there. He needs to get up there ASAP.
Right.
Nothing. You know.
And with all his cleaning, feels like Filch is one person. He's not even magical, so. Is it the house elves who help him? He can't clean a whole castle by himself. Why is he always so mad when...
Right.
I mean, he seems to be cleaning the entrance hall because that's where he always yells at the students to clean their shoes or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. That's another great, great point is what does Filch actually clean in the school? We know later, S-P-E-W, right? All the socks that Hermione leaves around the Gryffindor common room, right? Those get... collected or something, or they get left there
by the house elves. Yeah.
But she's trying to free them, essentially, right?
Right.
And it's crazy, Hermione, you're nuts. But they're up there, they're cleaning, they're picking up, they're delivering stuff.
Yeah.
So I bet they. I mean, we don't ever see Filch up in the Gryffindor common room.
No, I don't think he's in the common rooms at all.
And so who's cleaning Harry all their bedchambers and all that kind of stuff and whatnot? So
that's the house elves.
House elves. Yeah. But okay, back to my notes though, real quick. Hedwig is a little diva.
Oh, but she's also right about that. Harry did not treat her well last time, but
true.
The only thing that makes her want to deliver the letter is Harry threatening he will use Pigwidgeon.
Yeah, gonna get a little piggy,
and
Piggy can do this better than you.
No way.
No way, bro. Yeah kind of weird. The weird little rivalry. It's almost like this. I think there's this. I think they like each other, but it's one of those sort of like this respectable kind of like, I'm better than you and like you can be along, but remember who's the boss around here, you know?
I mean, he's a small little owl, so Hedwig definitely wants to show her.
It reminds me of like
how
Ronald Weasley treats one of the younger Creevies, you know?
Yeah.
The Creevies are always bouncing around. It's like, hey, we'll get Harry's autograph. Just chill.
Yeah.
Bro. And it feels like that's how Hedwig is with Pig.
Comes with age.
Yep. Okay, so now moving on just a little bit here. So the description of how the Imperius Curse feels is super interesting. I'd love for Lottie to read some of this to you guys.
Yes, and this is one of the most interesting things in this chapter, really, when they go to Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson, and Moody performs the curse on all of them. And Hermione is like, is this legal?
This is illegal. I'm telling you, I've been saying since literally day one when I went back and did all my rereads and stuff, they do stuff at this school that's illegal.
Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, they're drinking, they're performing unforgivable curses on the students. there are supposedly Filch has chains that,
right?
You know, the old ways of punishments.
They send them to the Forbidden Forest.
Out there in the scary forest.
The first years.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, they've got Neville, like you said last chapter. Neville's out there with the toads.
Oh, yeah, the toads, yeah.
You know? Gee, mini Christmas.
It is kind of last century, but...
yeah.
So, this is how it feels when you're under the Imperius curse.
Tell me.
It was the most wonderful feeling. Harry felt a floating sensation as every thought and worry in his head was wiped gently away, leaving nothing but a vague, untraceable happiness. He stood there feeling immensely relaxed, only dimly aware of everyone watching him. And then he heard Mad-Eye Moody's voice echoing in some distant chamber of his empty brain. Jump onto the desk. Jump onto the desk. Harry bent his knees obediently, preparing to spring. Jump onto the desk. Why, though? And then another voice had awoken in the back of his brain, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But...
Why?
The way it is described amazes me.
Yeah.
The Imperius curse is giving up all your worries, all your responsibilities, all your decision making.
Sounds good, dude.
Right? Doesn't that? I mean, it almost feels, that's why people, that's why it's so hard to fight it, because it feels so good.
Yep. Yep.
Someone else is in charge. I don't have to.
Right now,
anything. And I do wonder if this feeling changes after, over time. The crazy part to me is when, how does it even work? When you're not nearby to tell that person what to do, because we know there has been people for months, even years, under the Imperius curse, like Crouch.
Right.
How does it work when you go somewhere else? Do you give them vague instructions to, let's say they go to work under the Imperius curse. Do they tell them just agree with everything they say? That's a vague instruction, but you can't plan for every single conversation and action that's going to happen. How does that work?
I think things would go wrong, and there's telltale signs that you're under the Imperius curse.
Yeah.
It seems, with the Barty situation, for example, it's like, go to work, act as if everything is normal, right? And over time, there's this, he starts to delegate to Weatherby, right? So he starts to tell Weatherby, I need your help a little bit more.
Right.
But you can kind of update and modify those instructions under the Imperius curse as you go.
Yeah.
But you could do sort of like light mode, which is sort of like, go about your business, but remember you're under my control and you're going to do what I say, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But act as normal, behave like how you typically would on a typical day, and off you go.
Do you think you have to be more experienced to control someone who's not nearby for a long time?
Yes.
So you've...
Yes. I think if one of the students tried to do something like that, it wouldn't work. It would fade. And you have to, with the unforgivable curses, you have to really mean this, and you have to really be able to, I think, keep it up in a way, or put it on in such a strong fashion that it will stick.
Yeah.
Right? Because we can see right here, I wonder with Harry, he kicks it off pretty fast.
Mm.
He fights it, but so I think it comes down to willpower, right? Mm-hmm. And decision making. And one thing that's interesting, this is a story of choices, right?
Right.
Dumbledore always says, It's always about the choices we make and how those things define us. And so inside of this, with the Imperius curse, like you had just said, it seems to take away all your decision making and free you from any, you're just sort of this blissful kind of don't have to make any choices, no decisions. But this whole story is about making hard choices and doing those things. So witches and wizards who are more prone to do that, and they lean into things that are difficult, or they have had a difficult upbringing and they know adversity, they're more likely, I believe, to fight that and to throw it off.
Oh, yeah. You mean like Harry with his upbringing with the Dursleys?
Yeah, his experiences and stuff. Because there's every indication that when Harry comes to Hogwarts, or even well before that, that he should be depressed, miserable, yeah. hateful, spiteful, yeah. all those things, and he's not.
Right.
It's the choices. It's his mother's love that's sort of that protection that's over him. He has felt that in a large way, in a magical, ancient, powerful way. And so, but yet he's still now, I don't know, he chooses to not cave
yeah.
to the Dursleys, and he keeps hoping for something more, and mm-hmm. it gets him out of that. Like, it's wild. I work with a lot of students, and the students who grow up in abusive homes, it's hard to fight mm-hmm. against all of that environment stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it can actually warp your mind. And for Harry, he's unnaturally resistant to that.
Right.
So,
right. Which I think, he's the only yeah. one, and we're, again...
Who fights it.
Yeah. yeah.
There's another reason, though, which I think you're yeah. tiptoeing around. Do you want to talk about it?
Yes, let's do that, and then I'll talk about the other thing that the Imperius Curse also does. So, there is... Let me read that. We finished this little paragraph that I started reading here.
Because I think this is actually one of those things where, a reread shows you more of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like on your first read, it's like, all right, Harry's just tough. He's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he's the chosen one. But
and
then
you also
come back.
Didn't know. Yeah.
Exactly. You didn't know
what will happen. Yeah.
So you come back around a second time, and you're like, wow, I wonder what this was.
Yeah. So here's the second part of that paragraph. So the voice in his head says, "Jump onto the desk," and then, why though? Another voice had awoken in the back of his brain. "Stupid thing to do, really," said the voice. "Jump onto the desk." "No, I don't think I will. Thanks," said the other voice a little more firmly.
Mm-hmm.
"No, I don't really want to." "Jump now." And the next thing Harry felt was considerable pain. He had both jumped and tried to prevent himself from jumping. Result was that he'd smashed headlong into the desk, knocking it over and, by the feeling of his legs, fractured both his kneecaps.
Yeah. Yeah. So the question is, like, what is that other voice
yes.
inside of his head? And a lot of the fandom will, I mean, when you do the reread, you'll jump back and say, yeah. Scarcrux.
It could be Scarcrux. It could be Harry's own voice in his head.
Which do you think it is? If you had to put money on it, if you had to bet one way or the other, do you think it actually is Scarcrux, or do you think it is really just Harry and his past experiences?
Well, to me, there is some evidence that it could be Scarcrux, because first of all, he can tell, okay, Moody's voice, the way it's described, and I know it's kind of like not from Harry's perspective exactly, but it kind of is, right? This mm-hmm. omniscient narrator, but it's not from a first-person perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
But we do get Harry's perspective in terms of, okay, he knows it's Moody's voice
right.
telling him what to do, but then that other voice, he doesn't say it's my voice. You know, it's like, okay, why wouldn't he say, "I felt like I don't want to"?
Mm-hmm,
or,
mm-hmm.
well, sorry, he never does that. There's never like Harry and I.
Yeah, yeah.
But Harry felt like he didn't want to. But mm-hmm. there's explicitly explained there's another voice in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even though the voice...
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Voice of Scarcrux has never, does never really talk to him, does it? In any other occasion?
No, except for, I mean, there's this idea that he's always felt like, when he reads the name Tom Riddle, right? He felt like this was a friend from long ago. Friend. And my theory, which is going up on YouTube soon, be sure to check it out, subscribe, okay? Like it, leave a comment, and say, hey, Ez, what's up? I'm here. But my theory is that, you know, Voldemort cannot touch, Quirrell cannot touch Harry physically. Mm-hmm. They can't at all. Actually, Voldemort himself cannot even possess Harry. It disgusts him. It's so painful to be there because of the love and who Harry is. You're telling me a piece of his soul just lived there, chill, no problem, for years and was happy and is, you know, like is considered to be an old friend? There's something different about that bit of soul.
Yeah.
And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if it were speaking up, sort of saying, I don't think so. There is an extra resistance in Harry. There is the best bit, I think, of Voldemort in Harry. And I know folks will disagree with that, and J.K. Rowling even does say when it hurts, it wants to be back with the Master Soul and all that kind of stuff. But to me, it's still the only only explanation I can come up with is that, like, it's the best bit. It was the only part that was worthy enough to be inside innocent baby Harry.
Right.
You
right.
know? So
even if it's not Scarcrux. Why did I say Tom Riddle? I don't know. Even if it's not Scarcrux's voice directly, like the part of Voldemort's soul, but maybe it is Harry's voice, but maybe Scarcrux, the fact that there's two souls in there, doesn't make him stronger to resist, because it's very significant. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it could be definitely because of his upbringing, because of his mindset, because of how resistant he already is to so many things.
Yeah.
But are you telling me that no one else in this class had a tough upbringing? Or something they, you know, has developed a very, very strong mind.
Right.
It feels very significant that Harry's the only one who managed to do it.
Yeah, for sure. It's the combination of all those things. I think it's the combination of the fact that you've got Scarcrux. It's the combination of the trauma in his early life. And it's also the upbringing.
Yeah.
For example, when you think of Neville's trauma, who we're going to come to next year, right?
Yeah.
You think of, he was still raised with his aunt, right? Or his great aunt, or his grandma, whoever it was, right? Right? His grandmother?
Yeah, his grandmother.
Why did I say aunt? I don't know. But he's still raised with her, and there's still sort of this love and compassion, and they're all hoping that he's going to be a wizard and show true that he's got, you know, powers and whatnot.
Yeah.
And they're super excited when he does. Like, he's going to carry on the Longbottom name. Harry has zero of that at the Dursleys. I mean, zero.
Yeah.
He had to, like, rely on himself. He had to speak well to himself. He had to persevere through all of that and still find hope and look forward to something, right?
Yeah.
And I think it just makes him extra resilient. So I'm of the mind that it's probably more that than it is Scarcrux, but Scarcrux does help. It puts him over the edge. It's what makes it extra quick, you know, whereas it wasn't the same with everybody else there in the room. They all do have, to be honest with you, yes, there's a lot of children who do have trauma, and they have a lot of traumatic stuff, and they do become either more resilient or they fall prey to their environment, but most of us, the majority of students who come to school, they do have a healthy home, and they are coming from a place where they feel love and stuff like that. So it's unusual, actually, that you're going to have a lot of students in one classroom that would have a Harry Potter-like experience and be that resilient. So I think that it could be either one.
Okay.
So, my opinion.
I like that.
Now, an interesting one, deviating from the notes here, because I'm a professional, all right, we have a theory for you guys.
Okay.
There is this idea, and I'm going off of memory. I don't have it in front of me. I'm just going to spitball it to you guys. It's what I do. All right. There is a theory that fake Moody, Crudy, okay? Let's call him Crudy. Got to get that name down.
Yes.
Crudy basically does this. He says Dumbledore wants this, right? I think he persuaded Dumbledore. What do you think? And he's very persuasive. He goes to real Moody and says, how could I persuade Dumbledore? Here's what I want to try.
Yeah.
And then he starts to kind of, you know, he's manipulating. He's got control over that individual. He has him as a source of information.
Yeah.
He can ask, how could I best persuade Dumbledore to allow me to teach the Imperius curse?
Yeah.
And cast it on students. And not really even he could even actually talk to real Moody about what his real intentions are with it.
Yeah.
And then maybe figure out a way to convince Dumbledore. Because if Dumbledore knows what his real intentions are with this, it's bad. And you're probably saying, as we talk about, like, Dumbledore wanted this to be taught. I don't know that that's actually true. I think Crudy went to Dumbledore and said, I'd like to teach this.
Yeah.
And I'd like to, he's like, they need to learn, Dumbledore.
Yeah.
I need to put this on them, right? It could happen. The signs are out there. Voldemort's coming back.
And
this happened back in the day.
It sounds something like Moody would say.
Exactly. It's believable. Mm. And you have to say, it's difficult to fool Dumbledore. And here early on, especially early on in the school year, he's doing everything he can, dotting every I, crossing every T, to make sure that he is doing things by the book and that he is fooling the greatest wizard of all time.
Yeah.
So I think he went about this very carefully. But this lesson right here alone is an extreme risk. Mm-hmm. It's risky.
Yeah.
The fact if he could bring it up to Dumbledore and Dumbledore could say no, for sure. But he doesn't want to raise any alarm bells with Dumbledore that he might not be the real Moody. So he goes back and he gets permission to teach the Imperius Curse and to cast it on students and to see if they can throw it off. It's all a test.
Right.
It is all to see who he could use, which of the students are least resistant to it. And is Harry himself susceptible to it? Could I use the Imperius Curse on this boy? And could I maneuver him to a particular location or a spot in case? So the big theory is that the Goblet of Fire and sort of creating the port key situation is one of one facet or one phase of their plan.
Yeah.
It's not the whole plan.
Right.
There were other bits. There were other attempts where he was going to try numerous things and see how they worked. And that the Imperius Curse lesson here showed Crudy that, hey, I actually can't move forward with this aspect of our master plan. Harry Potter can throw this curse off so well that I'm not going to be able to use it against him.
But why, hold on, why did he then teach him or use it four more times to actually teach him how to resist it?
Well, no, that's a great point because the first time that he uses it, he throws it off. None of the other kids really were able to do that. By the end...
But not really. Like, he tried, but he actually jumped a little bit. So.
Right, but that's the thing, though, is that if you're going to... Harry Potter's acting weird, and he's, like, tipping and falling and moving around.
Yeah.
He is the most watched student in Hogwarts.
Right.
Professors are going to notice that he's acting and behaving strange.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. The whole key with the Imperius Curse is, like, how... I mean, when we see it at Gringotts, all the other goblins are like, that ain't right.
Yeah.
We just saw, you know, the head honcho over here do something. He allowed Bellatrix in, and we know he wasn't supposed to.
Yeah.
Was the Imperius Curse just cast?
Yeah.
And they're immediately suspicious.
Right.
So raising suspicion is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lighthearted, it's an attempt. And it's also one of those things, too, where I think, you know, he teaches it, and actually, Crudy, one of his problems is that a lot of people... were under the Imperius Curse, and he himself has been under it for years, and I think he's spiteful, and he hates that. I think he hates that he was controlled, and so part of him wants to actually teach these kids to resist it. But if he still can find one to use, or if he felt like there was an avenue to use with Harry Potter, then cool, he would do it. Now, it's weak. This is something that's been out there. I think even the Super Carlin Bros have mentioned it, and there's been other people who have theorized about what the whole plan was with the Goblet of Fire. I'm sorry, the Triwizard Cup at the end. And I mean, there's this whole thing where essentially, like, if they kill Harry Potter, that Wormtail was going to drink a Polyjuice potion and transform himself back into Harry Potter. And he was going to come back using...
What?
Yes. Why was the portkey able to bring him back and forth?
Oh, yeah. True.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's people have sort of studied this idea that there was more... aspects to this,
to the
like
plan
from
end,
the side of Voldemort. What if he would have got it right? What if he would have actually struck down Harry?
Yeah.
And then, you know, Peter Pettigrew comes back for a year and is a fake Harry, and we didn't know about it. And we're reading it, and this whole thing. Yeah. Anyway, crazy. But it is interesting that they're teaching this curse, and it also could be that Crudy went to real Moody and said, what is something, an unorthodox lesson that I could probably try to teach to make it really feel like I am you? What would you teach these kids? And that actually might have been something that real Moody would have taught them, too. So I can go either way on that. I think it's kind of a cool thing to consider. Like, he's teaching that lesson, we're getting a glimpse of what real Moody would do. I know people are always like, well, Crudy is a freaking amazing teacher. Yeah. Well, he learned from Moody. Moody, right. He asked him, what would you do? What would you? Yeah. How would you teach these kids? I need to be convincing to Dumbledore.
Right.
So just keep that in mind. Okay, moving on.
Well.
Oh, sorry. Is there something else?
Yeah, last thing about the Imperius Curse.
Yeah.
I thought it was very interesting to me, and kind of new. I forgot about that. That you can make people do things they are normally not capable of.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
So Neville, for example, performed a series of quite astonishing gymnastics he would certainly not have been capable of in his normal state. Do you think it really can give you powers you don't have? Or do you think it's something that is somewhere inside you? That a potential almost that you could have gone, like Neville was never trained in gymnastics, but maybe he could have been a good gymnast.
Mm-hmm.
Gymnast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Had he practiced more.
Yeah, I do think it's
kind
think
of
you,
odd that you could do that.
I think it enhances what you're capable of doing, and it does draw upon some of the things that you maybe, like you said, had potential to do.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to have, for example, Aunt Marge is not going to be doing gymnastics. You know what I'm saying? Like it's sort of like that would look odd. Then you're having somebody perform something that they can't perform.
Yeah.
So I think there are limits to it. It is sort of fascinating that he makes Neville do gymnastics around the classroom, and could he have done? Well, he did, right? He had to have had the ability inside of him somewhere to the physical ability to actually do that. The capabilities. Right. So
because
I don't. Yeah.
Because otherwise, could you make someone perform spells they would not be able to do?
I don't think so. You'd have to give them that information. You'd have to feed that to them and teach them yourself.
I would if that was the case, though, and I was struggling with a certain subject, I would tell Hermione, please put me under the Imperius Curse so I can, take this exam with your
help. That's an interesting one, because if you think about things that block you from learning stuff, some people have like blocks, and like writer's block or different things that they can't overcome that thing.
Yeah.
A little Imperius Curse, and hey, here you go, buddy. You're moving
right. <I'm just kidding. laughs> Sounds pretty good.
Sounds good. That was a weird one for sure. So, okay, all right. I think we got through the next couple of these my bullet points here. We kind of nailed down some of that. They'll have trouble controlling you. Yeah, that's
what
sure.
he says
that's
at the end.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, it's who does he mean there though? They.
Yeah, I know. Right?
They'll have trouble controlling you.
Okay, you could say Moody from his old days, they would be just like the Death Eaters in general, the people out there that are dangerous. But yeah, their kids who don't remember any of that stuff, they would be like, "What? Who's they?"
Right.
Who's he talking about?
Who's he talking about? Yeah, so. Trippy. Okay, moving on those to some Transfiguration. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I had this thought, which is, why is Transfiguration such a big deal?
Right?
Right?
Why is it such an important subject? Like, look what they do in this class. They are turning a hedgehog into a pincushion.
Which is, I mean, I think hedgehogs are cute.
Yes.
And they kind of are pincushions. So it's not, actually, it's a stepping stone, right? It's not that big of a transfiguration.
Yeah.
Because it's like they already have the pins there and they're turning into a pincushion.
Okay, but when is it ever used? It's like this typical question. And with math, it's a little different because we now know math is important because the thinking, maybe it's something like that. The thinking behind math is the important skill that you learn in math, right? And kids all the time sit in math class and are like, I'm never going to use it. Why am I learning all this? I have a calculator in my pocket at all times. Why am I learning this? This is dumb. They literally say to your face, this is dumb.
This is dumb. Yeah. I've had it said multiple
and
times
I mean,
straight to me.
I've been there too. I mean, I was a younger student and I didn't understand something in math.
Right.
It felt like, why are we even doing this?
And I literally say to them, can you follow 15 directions in a row?
It's
or
directions.
No?
It's the thinking.
Do you have the executive functioning skills to follow 15 direction sets? No. Okay. That's what we're that's what math is right now.
Right.
Okay. So I try to challenge them a little bit just because you got to figure out something to make them, you know, get up and get after it. But I think maybe Transfiguration does have that aspect where it's like the thinking behind it and it's the complexity of it, right? That grows your knowledge or understanding of magic, really, maybe, or it just sort of builds, it does something for your magical brain, and it helps you kind of develop that a little bit. That could be the case. I know that it is used, and we do see certain moments where, you know, our characters use transfiguration and stuff. But yeah, I don't know that it's used a lot.
Right.
And it's typically like charms seems to be the class that's a big deal, like that in Defense Against the Dark Arts. Those are the big classes where we see a lot of spell work and charm casting and stuff that helps us, you know? So, yeah. Transfiguration. McGonagall, love the class!
I know, it's
but
fun.
But I don't know what turning a hedgehog into a pincushion does for me.
Right. I would definitely be one of those students. Well, not really. I think I would like her class. I would silently ask myself, why are we doing this? But I would think there is a student in there. Like Ron, he would blurt out, like, why are we even doing this?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
But
for
Hermione
sure.
seems so passionate about it. Well, because partially it's she is the top of the class. It's a difficult class for her. And McGonagall loves pointing out that only Miss Granger was capable of turning the hedgehog into a pincushion.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of embarrassed, but also super proud of herself.
Right.
But yeah. It's just, yeah, one of those things where... seems cool, but what's the actual use of it? And I don't know.
So can I go over a few things with you? So we're talking about transfiguration and stuff. Classification here. So currently transfiguration is divided into four branches.
Okay.
They're in ascending order of difficulty. So transformation, vanishment, conjuration, and untransfiguration. Okay, so transformation, this refers to any transfiguration that deforms or alters the target in some way.
Yeah.
It should be noted that while this branch of transfiguration is the first covered in Hogwarts curriculum, containing simple transfiguration such as like a match to a needle, it can also pertain to the most complex and dangerous forms of transfiguration too. For example, petrification is a form of transformation and is very dark, complicated, and powerful magic. Whoa.
Wow.
So that's cool. And then transformation is divided into three sub-subjects, each with their own divisions and all of which overlap with one another.
So here's an interesting thought.
Go over those in a second.
Wasn't Dumbledore the transfigurations teacher at
Absolutely.
One point? And he can make himself invisible without a cloak. I mean, that's now we know, I guess it's the disillusionment charm, but that isn't that a form of transforming?
Yeah. Hey, also on that note, though, while Lottie mentioned that Dumbledore can make himself invisible.
Yeah.
Very interesting fact that he sent Newt to America to research the horned serpents.
Yeah.
And the horned serpents have a jewel on their forehead that actually has the power of invisibility. Holding that gem will cause you to be absolutely invisible. Is that not wild?
That is cool.
Dumbledore's got one in his pocket.
Yeah.
And he just turns it on, turns it off. Anyway, so breaking this down a little bit more, human transfiguration. So you have human transfiguration, switching, and I guess trans species transformation. So those are the three sort of like subcategories. And you have one of them, human transfiguration, refers to transforming where either the target or the end product is a human being, as well as the general human transfiguration spells that exist. This category houses the following types. You've got Animagus and Werewolf. Human transfiguration spells are taught in the Newt level, 6th and 7th year.
Wow.
So yeah, it's just to break down some of the uses or whatever.
There's probably some really dark stuff if you want to look into dark transfiguration, like you know, turning an animal into human form or something like that.
Yeah,
but it can't
Here's an interesting one: switching. Switching is another subtype of transformation magic. So during switching, a physical feature from one of the two targets is switched with that of another, hence the name. It differs from a straight transformation in two ways. First, switching targets two objects simultaneously. Secondly, the change in one of the pair is dependent on the change in the other. So I'm trying to figure out an example of this. It's difficult to gauge the relative difficulty of switches exactly compared to other types of transfiguration because the exact year in which they are learned is not known. However, Professor McGonagall was impressed when Hermione knew about switches as a first-year student, but was disappointed in Neville for not being able to perform even simple switches by fourth year. So I don't even know what that. Yeah, that's just kind of a weird one.
Oh, but, like when he transplants his ears onto a cactus.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was switching.
Maybe. I mean, that's kind of wild.
Actually, that might have been trans-species transformation, which is the third type down
wow.
here.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like changes... you controlling the matter. It's like alchemy.
Right.
You know, you're controlling different matters and combining them.
Yeah, it's wild.
That can lead to some really dark magic. And it's probably important to learn about it so you don't mess it up.
Right. Okay, let's go. Just real quickly, while we're on this.
Fascinating.
That was so transfiguration is the big one, right? Transformation, I should say, mm-hmm. and it has those subcategories. But the next two are vanishment and conjuration.
Yeah.
So vanishment is the art of causing things to vanish, to make them go into non-being.
Mm-hmm.
Vanishment is moderately difficult, learned in fourth year and up, and is considered one of the hardest transfigurations to be tested in one's OWL.
Let's hope you can't do that with a living being.
Don't know. I don't remember exactly.
That's
so
awful.
The difficulty of the vanishment to be performed positively correlates with the complexity of the organism to be vanished. For example, whether you have a vertebrae. So I guess, things that don't have a vertebrae are easier to vanish than things that do have a vertebrae.
Vanish living objects?
Guess so. Yeah.
That is pretty dark.
It's dark. Conjuration is the next one. Conjuration is the art of conjuring two things, bringing things into being, mm-hmm. And hence is the opposite of vanishment. So,
and this is different though from Akio. It's not like something that's over there come over here, but it's out of thin air. I conjure up a spoon,
right,
to eat my breakfast or something,
right? Yeah. Which is where we get into all the sort of the food stuff, Gantz, mm-hmm.
right?
Kind of
you
rules.
Can't conjure up food or drinks,
yeah. Yeah, so anyway,
interesting.
I've never really looked into transfiguration that mm-hmm. much, and I just always knew it's complex. It's tough.
Yeah, I don't know what made me question this, but something in the chapter, like the thing that she says to Neville, oh, don't let them know that you can't even do the easiest spells.
Yeah, yeah.
Or only Hermione can do this one thing, and everyone else you are behind. And why is that even so important? I don't know.
First of all, McGonagall's like, I'm a good teacher, okay? Just because you guys over here can't do a switching spell.
This girl can.
Right, so. This girl can. She was paying attention. You guys weren't, okay?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just kidding. I know how teachers get, where they get kind of prickly.
Oh, I know how it feels too when you're like questioning.
I've taught it. I've gone over it, etc. Boom. So.
Right. When even the best students don't get it or don't know what they're supposed to do, then you know, okay, it's definitely on me.
Yeah.
I did something wrong. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Anyway. Moving on, though. So the blast-ended Scroots, our favorite topic
they're
in the Harry Potter
series. Fast.
Yeah. So they are, there's extra work to be done. I have to say, I did laugh out loud at the Malfoy dig that Hagrid makes. I mean.
The ferret.
Come on. All these teachers are bending the rules and talking a bunch of smack that they don't need to be talking, but it is funny. It is actually funny. But because, Malfoy doesn't want to come back and study the blast-ended Scroots and he kind of gets on him and makes fun of him for being turned into a ferret.
If Snape and McGonagall can make fun of Neville or embarrass him in front of the class, so can Hagrid do that to Malfoy once in a while.
Yeah. You know who doesn't, though? Dumbledore. Right? I mean, Flitwick. We don't get
that. Flitwick, right? I thought about Flitwick, too. He doesn't do that.
Professor Binns.
We don't know.
You know? I'm sure he doesn't. I'm sure he just does his thing. Yeah. He's just a book.
He doesn't even know the names of the students. He doesn't care what they do.
Love it. I love that guy.
Everyone loves those teachers.
It's great. Great class.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyways, there's more and more homework building up because, again, the OWLs are next year.
Right.
And they're like, well, this is a ton. So, definitely an uptick in terms of studying at Hogwarts.
Right. And now imagine Hagrid, a class where you think, okay, this is pretty chill. We just have to make sure the Scroots stay alive and we stay alive too at the same time.
Yeah.
But now Hagrid says every other evening you have to come and watch them and take notes. And like, that's the time when you're supposed to do homework. So I get it. I would not want
to
do
ticked.
That either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway. Okay. But hey, it's drawing closer. They are 1 week away from the big event that this chapter is named after. The new students, not the new students, but the students from the other schools are arriving next week.
The
Friday.
Foreign exchange students.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't we love foreign exchange students? I do.
I
think they're cool. I think they're cool.
They're having a great time.
Yeah. So there's a big sign announcing the arrival of these other students, and it's going to be next week. And guess who? Ernie McMillan, Hufflepuff, notices and says, I got to tell old Cedric Diggory.
Right.
Because... He's going to be a champion.
Right.
He has
to check out his competition.
Yeah. And he's like Cedric's going to want to know. So they already kind of have this idea. It seems like if anybody's chosen from their house, it's Cedric. The Hufflepuffs seem to know who is the best among them. And they already know who their champion would be. Gryffindor doesn't seem to have... Everyone thinks they're the best.
Right.
Everyone thinks they can do it.
So you know what I mean?
They're honestly delusional.
Yeah.
Slytherin and Gryffindor house are both delusional. Well, we all could be Triwizard champions. No, Hufflepuff is they're more practical, pragmatic. Yeah. They're sort of, it's
Cedric. Our guy.
Yeah. We know. Cedric's our guy.
I mean, Ernie is like 2 years younger than Cedric.
Yeah.
So it seems like why would you be friends with someone who's 2 years older, right? It's just because they all know he's going to enter.
Puffs stick together.
Right? Yeah.
Puffs stick together.
I bet they have nights in the common room together where they, together with Cedric, come up with master plans for all the tasks and how to figure it out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Which is awesome, actually. You know, I always kind of imagine the Puffs play does such a good job of making them seem like they're all just really not that good at magic and they're really major underdogs and stuff. But you have Cedric, who is really freaking good, right? He's the best in the school. He's the champion. He's the true, like, he's going to be chosen as our champion. Yeah. And the way they play that off is like he's down there teaching them stuff. They're all gathered around, you know, and Cedric's at the front of this huddle and he's like, all right, guys, so this is how you do it, right? And he's going to break it down for them. And the Hufflepuffs are all in the room like, right? They just, thank you, Cedric.
Yeah.
He probably would have been honestly a great teacher, you know.
Yeah.
I think he would have been.
I think so too.
He'd have been good. So, okay, cool reference there. Ernie McMillan getting a shout out for him. Bickering about SPEW continues. Mm-hmm. It continues. We get the answer. This happens around the same time that we learn that Sirius does answer the letter. Yeah, pretty fast. And Hedwig's making some time.
Yeah.
She
is. Also, he's back in the country, so she doesn't have to travel as long.
Yeah, true. Okay, true. Yeah. Right. But I do think they are magically enhanced, though, and they fly pretty fast. It seems like the owl
seems
travels.
Super tired. She
takes
a little bit of that goblet of orange juice.
Oh, my gosh. I meant to say that at the start of the episode. Hedwig and the goblet of orange juice. It's literally hilarious. And I just think, like, yeah, go Hedwig. I want actually a whole piece of art right there.
Right.
Right? Hedwig and her goblet of orange juice.
It's just the fact that, orange juice is drunk out of a goblet.
Take a nice big drink. anyway, so their bickering continues. And this is where Fred and George are kind of saying, like, hey, we've been down in the kitchens.
Right.
Hermione.
They're good.
They're having a blast. You should go check it out down there. Like, literally. And actually, I bet among house, like, it's sort of not a great... They're not a great sample to look at in terms of all of what's going on with house elves.
Because they're being treated so well.
Yeah. Hogwarts is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like they're
no one
having a blast.
Kicks them around or
would abuse them or would be, you know, I guess really they're kind of left independently to do their own thing, which is great. So anyway, that was fun. We then have, let's see, moving on. Oh, here we go. This is it. So that kind of leads us into that Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny. They mentioned that in potions class was going to be on Friday.
Yeah.
And so that got cut a little bit short. Yeah,
you can relate to that, right? I mean, everyone had their
getting
subjects
out of that
for
class. Oh, my. Oh, it happens all the time. When there's a pep rally at school and the kids think, what period?
Short.
Yeah. When? What are we missing? Oh, yes. Okay. I hate that class. Like, they're just out. I'm like, oh, geez. Okay. Let the hate out of your hearts, you guys. Come on. Anyway. But yeah, then on Friday, the entire school lines up outside to greet the arriving students.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, Madame Maxine steps out of her carriage, decked out.
Everyone's jaws dropping.
Well, and I think it's like everyone's looking at her height and stuff, but like you look at all the jewels. And how
opals,
just decked out she is. And
high heels.
What's crazy is she herself, right, went there.
Yeah.
And you imagine she's coming through. She's some star. She is literally some great, awesome, I don't know, like she's a big deal for their academy.
Yeah.
And probably was when she went there and went on to do great things and came back and was a professor and then moved up the rank. You know, she's a big deal. Yeah. She is the headmistress. And
I mean,
so,
they rolled a carpet for her.
As they should. As they absolutely should. And I think when you look at the greatest wizards in the world at this time, she's up there.
You think so?
She's one of them. Oh. Yeah. I really think she is. And I think
well,
high standards.
It's so cool because her, actually, you're right. Because look at Hagrid, how powerful he is. He never finished his magical education.
Right.
She did. She is a full witch.
Right.
Probably really talented. Plus, she has that giant blood.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow. You're right.
Yeah, she's powerful. And again, I think the standards are high there. And it's one of, when you look at the best magical schools in the world, they're not having the Triwizard Tournament with every, I mean, it's like, I know regionally these are probably the closest ones, and so they're having their little competitions. It'd be cool to see if they had like an international version of this,
yeah,
where they went crazy. But yeah, I love it. I think it's really, really cool when she steps out, and it's just this magnificent moment where, yeah. We do learn that there's a dozen students with her, right?
That was surprising to me. I did not remember that, and I was wondering if that was because I was so young when I read it. And I just on a reread, I never really saw it. But I think I was so young when I read it, I just didn't know what a dozen is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah,
you,
for sure.
Remember those little words as a kid? You just read over and you're like, okay, yeah, it's a lot. It feels like a lot.
Yeah, there's some students there. Cool.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. No,
I but a dozen, it's only 12 students.
Yeah, which is cool. Not I was much. Wondering if it was 12 boys and 12 girls, but I think it's really just 12. So, you know, it's all good. What's interesting too is when she gets out, she's talking about her horses and like what they're gonna need. They need, obviously, we know from the same in the film, it's just great that they only drink single malt whiskey.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, it's funny. Dumbledore was like, "Hey, don't worry, our gamekeeper's got it. Hagrid is he's gonna be on it." And I guarantee you, Dumbledore was looking at those horses, looking at her, thinking like, "Hagrid, this is gonna be a great year for you. This is going to be a great year."
Yes.
I mean, really, he's going to be taking care of more magical creatures, and he's going to get to interact with her, and it's his moment to step up.
Wow.
They need a firm hand, these horses. Hagrid's got it.
He's the best person, actually, to do that. He knows magical creatures, and he is himself very strong to handle them.
Yeah.
My big question is, though, first of all, do you know what single malt whiskey means? What does single malt mean?
Single malt. I don't exactly know. I just, I don't know.
Okay, so
Scotch.
It says the single in single malt simply means that the whiskey is the product of a single distillery. Therefore, while a single malt can contain whiskey from many different casks, all of this whiskey must have been produced by one distillery.
Oh, cool.
Now, my question is, Dumbledore says to Madame Maxime, no problem.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder. We know the law is you can't conjure up those things. You can't conjure up food.
Right,
right. You can't conjure up drinks.
Right.
Where does Hogwarts hide its secret whiskey cellars?
Hagrid's got it.
And they're all from the same distillery.
Truly, I've always imagined that, well, he's got his own distillery. That's the thing. It is somewhere magically hidden.
Right?
You know that you can have tents that expand to, like, you know, huge hotels. So he somewhere has, like, there's one little door in his thing that's like this little cabinet that you open and you step into, and it's this huge, giant, like, distillery that he has out there at his place. And the teachers roll down, and they have parties down at Hagrid's. I mean, that's, you know,
actually hilarious.
Snape's finally like, yeah, okay, all right, fine, I'll go see Hagrid. I could use a drink. All right, fine, you know, go down there. But
funny.
Yeah, I think
funny
it is
to think about.
Because, I mean, you could say, well, they would just go to Hogsmeade and get it. But no, these horses are thirsty now. We don't have time for a trip they need to drink now.
Is that what they drink for energy? Like, literally, they don't eat food, but they just drink the whiskey?
Don't know. I think they eat food. I think they eat food, but it's like it's basically like, hey, as you're feeding and watering them, note that the water that they're going to drink is single malt whiskey. So it's not going to be anything else.
That's awesome.
Just to help your gamekeeper out a little bit. So
that's why they can fly, you know?
Yeah. So it's crazy. Yeah, that's why they can fly. It gives you wings. Wow. Yeah. Takes you all right off the ground.
Yeah.
And our last big point here that I noted down here in my notes that I took prior to the show in the doc that I create every week is that Durmstrang arrives and Victor Krum
steps out of the boat.
Vicky, as we like to call him. Old Victor is
and
here.
It takes a while. They see that strudel.
It's
a German word.
Yeah, the vortex, the whirlpool.
So they see that whirlpool appear in the lake, and all of a sudden, a ship pops out of the lake.
How?
I don't know.
How did it get there in their enclosed lock?
Right? Right?
It didn't sail in there. You know what I'm saying?
Theory.
Wormhole.
Theory. It's like you know, how all the fireplaces are connected. Maybe all the bodies of water are connected and you can use some sort of, maybe the ship is your flu powder.
What if that's an old form of travel before they had, like, you know, we used to travel by ship all the time, right? And didn't have the airplanes and the brooms.
And they developed something they can use on the ship to do that.
Ancient ways. That's crazy. That would be really kind of cool, actually.
But it takes a while. Imagine all the kids are standing there watching, okay, where they're coming from. Some of them are expecting another carriage from the sky, but then there's the ship coming out. And I imagine it probably takes like half an hour until, but you know, by the time they see the ship until they actually arrive up there, because they have to anchor, they have to disembark, then all walk up to the castle because the lake is kind of down here.
Right, right.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So they watch them this whole time and then... It's Karkaroff and
Dumbledore. Yeah. The audiobook is great. It's like Dumbledore. I'm like, oh God. Okay. Yeah. Igor, calm her down. But
then his most important student has a cold.
Yeah.
Let him through.
Poor Vicky.
Poor Victor.
Get him by a fire.
Yeah.
We gotta, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, here we are, you know, they're here, the foreign exchange students are in the house, and we're getting closer to the big, Goblet
Tournament.
Of Fire.
Yeah.
We're going to choose, we're going to figure out who's going to be the champion, so.
Who knows?
Exciting. Who knows? I don't know, we'll find out next chapter.
But. Three champions.
I do want to go ahead and say, breaking
always
through.
Always three, there is no more, no less.
Always three. I do want to say. Just so you guys know, only one, so from the time that Ez took over this podcast until now, there's only been one edit. You won't even know it happened. You won't even know that it happened. I'll go ahead and tell you, it was earlier sometime. It was one edit. And I just want to say, I'm proud of that.
Yeah, me too.
Did a great job.
You did a great job. Thank you.
What happens when you take notes prior to the show and you're well prepared, okay? It's just what happens.
You can just wing it.
Yeah.
You're great. You didn't even need those notes. You could have...
No, I did.
Winged it
without
anything.
Winged it. Like the... what are those things called? The horses. They're like something.
Yeah, Palominos.
Yeah, something. Freaking awesome, Palominos. Though. They look crazy cool. But anyways, yeah, we wung it and we got it and we won it. So hope you guys are doing well. And thanks for listening this far.
Thank you so much if you made it this far.
We appreciate you guys. Come on. Do. You guys know that, right? Like we do. And let me tell you too, we are heating things up over on the YouTube. I want to put a plug in for this. I'm posting some more. If you like, I guess, our podcast style stuff, maybe we'll put a poll up or ask people on Patreon, or maybe we'll just, I don't know where we'll post them, but we're doing theory videos on YouTube that some of them are like 18 minutes long, and it's just me talking about the Elder Wand.
Yeah.
Or me talking about the
Horcruxes.
Horcruxes or Grindelwald versus Dumbledore or Snape theories and stuff like that. Please, actually, I would like to hear from you. It might even encourage me to get more of these done. But send us a message on Instagram at Fleur and Bill. Let me know if you would actually like for me to drop them either on Patreon as extra content that we could put up for $1 or something a month, or if you wanted us to just actually, because sometimes the feed is like a thing that we don't want to oversaturate,
right?
Because it, you know, can confuse people with the reread. On YouTube, you can just put in a playlist and it's no problem, you know. But if people would want to hear those, especially the longer ones, that might be extra content that you guys might want to consume. Yeah. And I know people like to, you know, if we're doing the podcast, they just listen on Spotify. They just listen on Apple Podcasts. So if you want that, let me know. I wouldn't mind posting that and putting it out there for you guys. So you don't have to go over to YouTube and it, really, it's all about the script and the audio and the messaging behind it. The visuals are just there for whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's picture Harry Potter. Who cares? So anyways, let me know though, because we're starting that, and I've already gotten four or five scripts done and ready to start producing those through the rest of July. So there you go.
You've been such a hardworking Hufflepuff.
Hey, I'm trying to represent Cedric over here. I'm trying to really make him proud. So, which I will be doing some Cedric theories and some Cedric what ifs, by the way.
Oh yes.
Golly.
What if you know, I think I told you I ship Hermione and Cedric.
Hermione and Cedric.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
She actually admires him in this chapter.
Yeah.
And
she doesn't know him very well, but she thinks he's a really good student.
Right.
She doesn't deny that he's good looking, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right. She doesn't.
Lockhart.
Yeah, Ron's joke.
Hilarious.
I mean, Yeah, you only like him because he's good looking, you know, and then, yeah.
She's like, no.
No.
I don't just like people because.
Lockhart. And like, wow.
Looks.
Ron got her. Yeah. But I do think they would be a great couple.
Yeah.
Still, Ron is her guy, but.
Yeah, especially as she got older. Well, he's in his sixth year, so next year would have been interesting had he been alive and everything would have been normal. Maybe she would have turned to. You know, maybe something, you know, how there's some sort of energy between her and Cho because of Harry. Maybe there would have been an actual something between mm-hmm. them because of Cedric, and she would actually be interested in that guy.
Oh, between her and Cho, you mean?
Yeah.
Hermione and Cho.
Because Hermione is not interested in Harry. They're just friends. But you Cho know, thinks, oh.
Cho's awesome. Yeah. I like Cho a lot. I really wish we had more Cho, and I honestly wish we got to see her do more baller magic and stuff. She feels like, you know, Luna's great. Luna's awesome, but I feel like we need more representation from
Ravenclaw. Yeah,
and we needed them to kind of, you know, even Hufflepuff, clearly, but it's just, man, I want to know more about the other students and who's good at what. And
Ravenclaw's like the most mysterious house. You don't really, until the last book, and the last couple of chapters, you don't know anything really about where's actually their common room and who's actually there.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah. So anyway, all right, so more on that later. We'll be shipping, we'll put a poll up. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Hermione, Cedric, could it have happened? Anyway, all right, friends, hey, before I have to make any more edits on this episode, we appreciate you guys. Thanks. That is all for this week. Thank you for tuning in to Shuck Eyes Radio, 94.7 COZY. We hope that you're going to join us in the future. We thoroughly enjoy meeting new positive Potter people that don't behave like babbling, bumbling bands of baboons.
Baboons.
If you don't want to miss out on the next episode, then be sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review and follow over on social media at Fleur and Bill.
And if you truly enjoy our content, consider supporting our growing wizarding family on Patreon or Apple Premium. You will find all the links down below. Thank you so much to all our current patrons. We appreciate you to Luna and back. On our next reread episode, we will discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 16, The Goblet of Fire. So make sure to tune back in next time. And until then, have a great rest of your week. Thanks for joining us in our shell cottage today. We know it's not much, but it's home.
I'd just like to remind you that Hedwig enjoys orange juice from a goblet.
She does.
Orange looks like fire, and it's literally a goblet of fire. It's, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's like, it's a liquid fire that Hedwig is drinking. Come on.
Assuming.
It's awesome. Okay.
It's fun.
Okay.
Bye.
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 Knox. Back to school savings are officially in session at Tanger Outlets. Shop tax-free August 4th through 5th and save up to 70% off the latest school styles. The best of apparel, footwear, accessories, and more. Save at Nike Factory Store, American Eagle, Gap Outlet, Crocs, Under Armour, Banana Republic Factory, and hundreds more. There's always something happening. Discover the latest fun and events all season long. Tanger Outlets, your savings destination.